You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello, welcome to our podcast, The Signal
and the Noise,
that will attempt to give you a peek into the inner workings of Mint's long story. This is Sunit.
And I am Ajay.
And we are both editors with Mint.
Every week, either one of us will attempt to walk you through the most defining development in the world of business, politics, or technology.
Let's dive in.
Hello, welcome and thanks for tuning in. In India, until last week, social media, online news portals, and streaming platforms like Netflix and Amazon Prime were outside the realm of government regulation. This wasn't always a bad thing. Online news portals, for instance, could be more critical of the government without fear of retaliation. And a Netflix or an Amazon could stream content that may not be approved by India's censor board. But there were downsides too. For example, what happens when rumor gets spread on social media? Until now, self-regulation was the answer. But the government wants to change that. And any time the government gets involved, controversy can't be far behind. One major sticking point is, under the new rules, a new super committee of government bureaucrats have the power to block a news story or a movie if a complaint gets escalated up to them. Already, DigiPub, an association of digital news publishers, has written an angry letter to the government. What does all of this mean for you, the user? Joining me to unpack that question is Raman Cheema, a lawyer, an online free speech activist, and a net neutrality campaigner.
Hi, welcome to the show, Raman. So let's start off with your broad take on the new regulations. What's good, what's bad, and what's okay with some modifications?
Thank you for having me. When it comes to the new regulations issued under the Information Technology Act, it's actually very difficult to find anything that's overall okay. There are a couple of clauses in it which are perhaps not as bad as people feared it would be, and they've tried to work in safeguards. But overall, the rules you currently see that the government issued last week are fairly overbroad, contain mandates that would seemingly force an increased amount of self-censorship as well as monitoring and censorship of users by internet intermediaries, but also, as you know, create drastic new mandates on larger intermediaries, including messaging providers, as well as new restrictions that are unprecedented in Indian law, forcing the registration of digital news services, as well as a government-monitored, government-backed self-regulatory system, and I use that term in scary quotes a bit, for streaming video services. So it's quite concerning. It is, as I mentioned, not too much that's positive there. They have sometimes worked in a few safeguards about language, for example, that some powers will only be used if there's no less intrusive means available, and a few other mechanisms like that, but they're fairly token protections.
Right. So there are three different verticals which are affected. So just quickly, which one is the worst hit then? Would it be digital news, streaming platforms, or social media intermediaries?
To be honest, perhaps the most concerning definitely are the new mandates or the increased mandates on internet intermediaries more generally. And that is definitely primarily on social media, but you need to remember that it's a fairly broad canvas because the Information Technology Act defines intermediaries in a very broad way. And that's one of the problems with these rules, in that people have said, how can you create different categories when the main law passed by Parliament doesn't do that? But in addition to that, the sort of framework that's been put in place for video streaming services is also quite alarming because it's really never been done in that manner before, and you have no clue about which direction it might go. The provision about digital news services on the face of it is less concerning because it says that you basically need to register. But unfortunately, if you see it in the wider context of how there's been increased pressure on online news services, perhaps because the government believes a lot of more critical voices seem to live there and use that to criticize or cast light on the government, that coupled with other regulations and mandates as well as the dynamic nature of that sector, there may be significant harms that come, but you will probably only see those harms later down in the road.
I understand. So we will get into the details of your concerns in a bit. But before that, I want to ask, you also in passing mentioned the IT Act. So one major concern seems to be that these are rules passed under the IT Act rather than a new law in itself, which is passed by Parliament. Why does this matter? Could you explain? Isn't the content of the rules the only relevant thing?
You know, that's an excellent question, because yes, some people say that you know what are your concerns about the actual provisions, not the manner in which they're created. But the reality is, in a democratic system like India and under our legal system, the government can only regulate a certain issue within the mandate of what's permitted to it by the Constitution and by Parliament. And in this case, Parliament, simply put, has not given it the authority to create new regulation in these areas and to go beyond the limited mandate that the IT Act gave it. And what that results is that today you have rules that have the force of law, but actually have not gone through proper lawmaking process. And that's essentially an authoritarian system. That's bad for the private sector, because the private sector doesn't have clear predictability and knowledge about what's being created and the ability to represent its point of view. It's bad for citizens, because citizens don't have their elected lawmakers stepping in to protect them and to take action. And for judges and for the legal system overall, it's very alarming, because the government's moving well beyond its acceptable powers. And also, what you therefore have is mandates there, which are in fact, in a sense, new law that you needed societal consensus and approval from institutions, in this case, Parliament and others. You just don't have them there. So besides the substantive concerns on the rules themselves, which I pointed out and many people have already been speaking to, the process they followed is very, very alarming. And it's particularly concerning because perhaps we're the only democracy right now that's tried to pass such significant rules without running it through Parliament. Even Singapore, which, for example, passed a very troubling fake news law now nearly 2 years ago, and which has been principally used against its opposition. Even Singapore passed its law through its Parliament. Of course, it's a Parliament controlled by the ruling party, but they, you know, at least went through the process there. We have not even done that. And that's alarming, because that's also exactly what perhaps differentiates India from some of our neighbors and from countries like China, in that you at least know there's democratic process and democratic process can be course corrected. And here you have rules that now MPs will perhaps have to step in later to challenge or annul, but it becomes very difficult. And it overall casts doubt on the entire IT Act legal system and the rules the government's issued. And it just sets up the government and the entire sector for more conflict and more confrontation.
I understand. So I will just pick on two details, which a lot of people seem to have a problem with, basically, which relates to takedown or blocking provisions, which in a way could limit free speech for video streaming as well as social media intermediaries. Although there is some form of self-regulatory body, which we don't know how this will take shape, but a retired judge or someone, an eminent personality appointed by these firms, presumably. But there is an escalation mechanism where it goes to the government, basically a super committee of government bureaucrats who have powers now to, for example, take down content of a streaming platform if complaints are escalated up to them. Are there enough safeguards, you mean, in terms of the self-regulation mechanism, where supposedly a retired judge probably has a first say, or is this going to lead to content being taken off maybe an Amazon Prime, like Tandav, for example, which has been in the middle of controversy recently?
And so the short answer is there aren't enough safeguards, and these safeguards are quite weak. What essentially you've seen the government do is to try and take the very patchy, very incremental system that exists in broadcast in India and force it onto internet services with perhaps an even tightened mandate. And that's very alarming, because A, the nature of technologies is very different, right? Broadcast is literally, as you know, broadcast on public spectrum bands in a manner that is very difficult for the audience to know sometimes what might be being shown. And the idea is that, yes, because, for example, you know, a young person may tune in at any point of time, and you don't have age controls on broadcast TV by and large in India, that people may encounter content that they're not comfortable with. And that therefore the government has a mandate there to sometimes require regulation. That's not the case when it comes to online streaming, because in online streaming, most of them nearly you have to pay in order to access that content, and there are other restrictions that can be put in by users as well. But the bigger issue is that, firstly, you are going to see a potential increased chilling effect on content that's there. Because what the government has done by doing this, it's sent a signal that, oh, we want you to police and take more content down or prevent it from coming up in the first place, which is quite concerning. You will perhaps see online streaming become more like broadcast TV in India, which, as you know, is actually very heavily censored, and not just for content that might be, shocking or might be, for example, provocative or sexually explicit, but content that even talks about religious issues, that talks about politics, gets censored on broadcast TV in India. As you know, for example, you'll never see a movie in India that talks about, half the time now, that will say talk about beef eating, because those words will be censored by the companies themselves before it's broadcast here. And the other thing that you do need to be alarmed is that it's created a self-regulatory / government censorship system that has absolutely no approval from Parliament at all. And it's quite remarkable and striking to me that the government has created this massive mechanism and apparatus without ever once getting members of Parliament to categorically vote on how that is legal and in a manner that would test, that would pass tests of constitutionality. So, you know, it's very rare that a lawyer gives a categorical opinion about something being problematic, but I can, without like reservation, say that the framework they passed is unlawful and unconstitutional. Let's see whether it gets saved, because there's a long, troubling history of the court sometimes allowing pre-censorship when it comes to electronic media in India. But on the face of it, it's unlawful what the government has done so far.
Okay, well, what is the scope for change now? Are the rules a done deal?
So the rules right now are in force. They have the effect of law. The thing, as we discussed a bit earlier, is that they are subordinate legislation. They are rules issued under an act of parliament. So actually, copies of these rules are required to be tabled in the Houses of Parliament as soon as possible. Regrettably, the government has often delayed the tabling of these rules. That means they only bring copies of it into Parliament perhaps after the session has happened, or perhaps only into the next session, unintentionally or intentionally. But the government is required to table copies of these rules in Parliament, and MPs actually do have the power and the authority to make amendments to these rules or to call for them to be annulled. And in fact, this is something that didn't happen to the predecessor of these rules in 2011, when a motion was moved by a member of the CPIM, Mr. P. Rajiv, a then MP in the Rajya Sabha, calling for the annulment of the intermediary rules of 2011, which were not carried out, but the government proposed to make changes then. And that's the reality, that while MPs can make changes or even call for the rules to be annulled, in practice, given how our parliament functions and the limited space provided to opposition parties to get parliamentary time, it's quite an uphill battle, because both houses have to agree on such changes. And beyond that, of course, courts can challenge and go into these rules. And you should probably expect that, given the sort of comments and concerns you've seen, that it'll go into court very soon. And you must also remember that there are existing court hearings going into some of the issues related to the subjects regulated by these rules now. So perhaps it'll come up in existing hearings, or it'll come up in new ones as well. But lastly, remember that at any point of time, the government itself can change these rules. And perhaps that would be the best outcome, although it's the least probable at the current moment.
Okay. Stepping back a little bit, I also wanted to talk about international parallels, because you also mentioned Singapore briefly. Have other countries tried to regulate online news or social media in a similar fashion? Which country or countries are doing this better than others?
So to my knowledge, none of the major established democracies has actually tried to regulate news and online content in this particular manner. For example, Singapore, that I mentioned, that passed a very controversial dedicated fake news law, did so 2 years ago on the topic of fake news, not of all internet platforms. And as you also know, Singapore's status as a democracy is something that is a bit contested and challenged. And it's recognized generally that the ruling party, the People's Action Party, has significant powers. If you look at other countries which have laws in a similar situation or closely aligned to us, and that essentially, in a sense, is the United States, the United Kingdom, and parts of the European Union, you have seen proposals that have sometimes called for the change of these intermediary liability laws of the legal powers that regulate internet platforms in terms of the liability for user content. But you have not seen any government there carry out executive rules to change those laws yet. There are proposals to perhaps change and reform those laws, including the United States, but we're still waiting to see the package of those changes in Congress. For example, Trump, the former US president, try to issue an executive order to amend or change the legal liability of internet platforms in the United States, and that really didn't go through. And there's now instead a proposal in the US Congress on this. You see moves in the European Union to change its legal framework for electronic commerce, which also would impact its intermediary liability safe harbor provision, which in fact Indian law has copied, But they still have to move those amendments, and it will take some time. And there's a very robust discussion around how to protect free expression. So in a nutshell, while you do see other laws that regulate parts of internet intermediaries or even regulate video streaming platforms partly, you don't see the exact sort of mechanisms you've seen happen here in India. The closest example that the Indian government has sometimes tried to cite to is the online harms package that the United Kingdom is considering. But note what I said, it's considering it. It's actually not passed that law yet, and there's been a very robust discussion around why it may impact free speech and the UK government's being cautious. The closest parallel actually might be our neighbor, Pakistan, that passed a series of online harms rules via executive process. That means they didn't go to parliament and they just said, we are passing the rules under an existing cybercrime law, and they've used that to try and take down content from web platforms. And it's regarded as a very controversial act that the Pakistan government fast-tracked last year during the pandemic.
So this kind of taking down stuff off social media or streaming or even news platforms is a very controversial thing, and especially when the government gets involved in any country. So I just want to kind of ask you if you had any thoughts on what might be a good starting point to imagine rules for social media or online news, which are unregulated, not in India, but in large parts of the world. Because I guess everyone would agree that rumor is bad and news shouldn't be inflammatory, right? So what is a constructive way to imagine some form of regulation which also protects free speech?
Now, that's an excellent question. And if you see, there has been international discussion and a degree of consensus building that's been happening about the space to regulate and legislate in the field of internet law while respecting human rights. You'll see comments from the General Assembly of the United Nations around its internet freedom resolution, as well as the importance of protecting the right to privacy in a digital age. And more importantly, you see some of the reports of the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Expression has talked about the need to regulate to protect user and public interest concerns while also safeguarding against abuse of human rights. I think the important thing to note most of the time is that this is not a completely blank slate. We often think that, oh, well, existing laws don't apply to the internet. That's not true. And India is a great example. For example, Indian law already makes distribution of fake news that causes harm or targeted incitement a crime. That's actually a British colonial era provision that they did for particular purposes, but still exists in our statute book. So you actually don't often require a new dedicated fake news law, and you have to make the case out about why you need to do that. Many countries do create legal frameworks that provide limited immunity to internet intermediaries for user content for very good reason, because internet intermediaries, whether it ranges from the telecom provider to a cloud hosting platform to others, if they were held liable for all user content, the internet would grind to a halt, and there would be a privileging of over-censorship. There is, I think, agreement there that you can tighten some of those mandates and make it clear that platforms should take action based on court processes and other accountable mechanisms. And I would recommend that is the framework we need to go down. We need a framework towards content governance, which is built on the prism of human rights and that privileges content governance and content regulation mandates that come from clear law passed by accountable institutions that safeguard human rights, and where decisions to take down content or restrict content are preferably issued by public sector agencies and other actors whom can be challenged and who are subject to oversight as well as accountable court process. And just to give you an example about, unfortunately, why we're not in that space in India. India today, the government can censor web content by secret orders that are never made public without hearings to the original poster of the content or even to the intermediary to whom it might send that order. These decisions are made by purely internal civil servant control committees and are only overseen by other civil servant committees and not by judges, other elected lawmakers or other independent experts. So you can see India as an example of perhaps following a process that tries to do the right thing, but actually is incredibly flawed and doesn't really provide robust checks to protect citizen rights and your right to expression and your right to assemble and associate freely online.
Okay. And that's what I want to end with, which is what happens to users now under these rules. Of course, some digital publishers, even net streaming websites have been saying things off the record, at least, if not publicly. But what happens to the end user, the person who uses a Twitter or a Facebook or watches stuff on Netflix? What happens to them now once these rules come into effect?
So we'll have to wait and see. And it's a very alarming situation for users, actually, because in a sense, the biggest, I would argue, you know, loser in this entire discussion is individual Indian internet user. She or he will have much more of their data now collected mandatorily by tech platforms and retained for up to half a year. That's what the government has required intermediaries to do under these new rules as well. Their privileged, secure, encrypted communications may be re-engineered or undermined in order to facilitate the government's clause on tracing the original creator of a message on messaging services on significant social media intermediaries who do messaging. Those users don't have new rights to be informed of when government censorship orders or surveillance orders come regarding their content. And actually what these rules do is weaken users' rights given to them, or rather strengthened for them, by the Supreme Court in the earlier Shreya Singhal ruling back in March of 2015, as well as the Puttaswamy right to privacy ruling, which strengthened our rights to liberty online. If you're a user, you should carefully be monitoring potential changes to terms of service or product practices by the intermediaries you use. You should try and insist that whatever measures they take are revealed publicly and that you are informed if your data is impacted. But perhaps more importantly, you need to have your voice heard. While these rules might be the law, ultimately in a democracy like India, it's only laws are never permanent. They are often changed and reformed by the government themselves or under political pressure or parliamentary process or in the courts. And we're perhaps at that period of contestation and reform right now. And just remember, it's not a academic prospect. When the government amended the IT Act in 2008 and issued significant rules across 2009 to 2011, it impacted users quite negatively, and people thought those rules would perhaps always be there. But instead, what did happen was it was taken into the Supreme Court after multiple challenges across the country and popular outcry. And Section 66A was struck down, but also the Section 79 rules were read down by the Supreme Court, and the court took other actions. So we're perhaps at that stage of contestation and hopeful reform anytime in the immediate future.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining, Raman, and kind of shedding some light on all of this. And I know you have a report coming out on how many times India blocks its internet, which is a separate conversation topic. But yeah, we'll be tracking that report also. And thanks for joining.
Thank you.
You have been listening to The Signal and the Noise. We would love to hear from you. Reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram on @HTSmartcast.
Or you can also reach out to us personally at Sunita Arora
and @AJAxiom. To listen to more such interesting podcasts, do log on to htsmartcast.com.
We'll be back next week with a new story, another fresh voice, or a unique take on the world.
Do stay well until then, and keep supporting good journalism.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.